Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by Hagen Oaks, America's most awarded golf facility, and Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome into the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sacktown Sports 1140. Hi, everyone. I'm Frank LaRosa, along with Scott Marsh, and we're going to talk golf for about an hour here on Sacktown Sports 1140. Scott, how you doing tonight?
Doing fantastic. And Frank, I can't wait to get fully caught up with you. I know you've been down at Pebble Beach for the special Langley event that you host every year. And I know we'll have more on that on next week's show, but you got to give us at least a teaser on how great it was.
You know, Scott, being down there really reminded me what it is about the game that that is so appealing to me, because, you know, it was golf, it was charity, it was talk, it was interviews, it was revealing secrets. It was just, you know, it was like a foursome with your best friends. It just had everything. And to have Annika Sorenstam and Huey Lewis as our honorees, along with Peter Jacobson, it was a very exciting event. Jim Langley was the head golf professional at Cypress Point for 34 years. And I don't know that I've ever met a man. I used to call him the human mirror, Scott, because there was no way you could compliment him. He would always feed it back to you. Jim, you look great today. Well, why wouldn't I, Frank? I'm here with you. You know, he was just that kind of a guy. He was, I don't think he ever charged any of the members for a lesson in the 34 years he was at Cypress Point. He was just beyond reproach, and became a very good friend. So this event means very, very much to me as we carry on in his name. Jim's been gone about 7 or 8 years now, and it's, you know, his spirit lives on in the event. But again, to have Annika there and Huey and about 270 people in the room that night, and then a full field at Pebble Beach the next day, you know, it was two incredible days.
That's just awesome. And of course, the fact that it's at Pebble Beach makes it just even that much more incredible. And I know we'll have a lot of coverage on that on next week's show. And Frank, I know this week we've had so many people telling us how much they enjoyed the long interview we did with Annika last week, and those who didn't hear it, that they wanted us to re-air it. So we're going to plan on doing that tonight.
You know, I've really been surprised at the number of people that that have come up to me and you as well, Scott, and say, you know, how do I hear that interview? You know, it was and it was fun to have Annika for that long, you know, for 30 minutes. She was very gracious to stay with us. So you're right. We've decided that we're going to re-air that tonight. And we hope the listeners enjoy it as much as we did having the interview with her.
I know they will. And of course, Greg Almation will be with us too. The Bobby Jackson Golf Tournament is up on the 29th, and we're looking forward to talking to Greg, a longtime friend of ours, a great person in the community, and of course, the executive director for Bobby Jackson's foundation.
So it's a night of charity in golf. You know, we've got it all going on. We will be right back, and we will be right back with Greg Almation right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
You are listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sacktown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa, along with co-host Scott Marsh, and we are welcoming in Greg Almation. Greg is the executive director of the Bobby Jackson Foundation, and we're going to talk a little bit about the foundation and a little bit more about the Bobby Jackson Golf Tournament coming up. Hi, Greg. How are you?
I am great. Thank you, guys. Good to hear your voices.
Nice to be with you. You know, you've been with the Bobby Jackson Foundation for a long time. Tell us how the foundation came about and what the goals are.
Well, Bobby started the foundation before I came about. It was in L.A., and he was a little disappointed with what was going on in Los Angeles. That's not our hometown. Everything we do is here. So his mother died of breast cancer. My mom died of breast cancer. I was at a restaurant, and a friend of mine owned the restaurant. He goes, "Hey, Bobby's here. You need to go meet him and say hello." So I went over, met, gave him my condolences for his mom. And I told him my mom had died of breast cancer also. And he said, "Let's go get a cup of coffee." So we met later on that week and started talking about his foundation and what his goals were for Sacramento. And And I was asking him 1,000 questions. And I said, listen, if you'd like some help, I'm local. I've done some sports marketing with celebrities before. I'd love to help you get back in the sack here with Sacramento. And he agreed. So we started working together, and it developed into just an outstanding, beautiful relationship. My question was to Bobby, what do you want to do in Sacramento? Would you like to get involved in more community stuff? Because, you know, I can get you endorsements. That's no big deal. But you guys make millions of dollars. You don't really need these little endorsements. This is a small market. I think what you really need to do is give back to the community. And he agreed. So I started raising money, doing events, and it's fun. It is tons of fun raising money, knowing that that money is going to go to a really good purpose.
Boy, that sounds like it was meant to be. What a great meeting, and it certainly developed into something. The foundation does support a lot of local programs. Tell us some of the things the foundation does.
Wow. Well, there's a long list, but we get calls every year for certain needs in the community. This year, we're given to UC Davis Children's Hospital. That's a heart for Bobby children. We're giving to the Crocker Art Museum. They're starting a new art program for children through the Mel Ramos Foundation. So we're going to do some help there. There's student scholarships that we give. We help out City of Refuge, which is an excellent organization in Oak Park. It's actually a ministry where they take girls that are sex trafficked off the street, give them housing and food, and try to get them in the society and working for companies. I mean, the needs go on and on, and it is really a blessing and fun to see us help in some way to do that.
That's really remarkable. And as you say, it's all local. And not only do you have an opportunity to feel as though you're helping your own community, but you actually get to see, you know, some of the things that come of the money because you are local. So that's the best of both worlds.
You know, it is. It's kind of a selfish motive for me. It's really fun and exciting to see the difference that we're making.
And it's got to be, especially in the memory of both your moms, that has to, you know, have just a whole different level of satisfaction for you and Bobby.
Are you going to try to make me cry here on the radio? What the heck?
That's our intent, Greg, actually.
Well, we have a really special thing we're doing this year. I haven't told the family yet, but we know a local family that their little baby girl was in the hospital after birth for about 6-7 months, and they had to move her to San Francisco, had a lot of surgeries, and the dad and mom had to go there, stay in the room with the baby at the hospital. He was out of work for a long time, not getting a paycheck, and we decided we're going to help that family. They need help. They still have a mortgage. They have food they need. They have other kids. So we're going to give them a little check to help them along the way, too. And that's really exciting.
We're talking with Greg Almazian, the executive director of the Bobby Jackson Foundation. You know, everybody would probably agree that it's great to support programs, to give money, to help folks. But you can't do it without money. And the money comes in various ways. And one of the ways is the upcoming Bobby Jackson golf tournament, where you are not only executive director of the foundation, but tournament director there as well. So that's a pretty exciting event going to be happening at El Macero in what is it, next? Yeah, pretty soon here.
August the 29th.
The 29th, yeah.
Monday the 29th.
You know, I used to think that you knew what you were doing, but when I realized that you invited us to play, I thought, you know, he kind of lost his mind there for a moment. So we're looking forward to being out there with you. But what can we expect at the Bobby Jackson tournament?
Well, I tell you, this year, it's bigger than ever. Every year it gets bigger and bigger. We have more people that want to play, more people that want to help and sponsor. So there's typically a sponsored booth on every hole. There's food and beverage on the golf course. There's food before you go out on the golf course. I mean, I should call it the food and beverage tournament, not the Bob Jackson tournament. But it's fun. It's very festive. And we have a long drive contest for men and women. We have a lot of women that play in the tournament. Gosh, we have Thompson Toyota has a car for a hole-in-one, which is awesome. Single Springs Honda is giving a $10,000 hole-in-one on a par three.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of great prizes. The raffle prizes, I've limited that because it got overwhelming. It just takes too long. So I have about five or six auction items and about 20 really good raffle prizes. But there is going to be a couple surprises on the course with some crazy stuff going on. So you guys are going to have fun.
We always have fun. Scott, you've played in that tournament. What are your thoughts?
Oh, it's fantastic. And first of all, Greg, I just have to thank you for all you do for the city of Sacramento. You're a true servant in our community, and you've been a Sacramento raised person who has put your roots and your family lives here. And so we're lucky to have you in this community. And that needs to be said, first of all. You know, in terms of this tournament, you know, we got to play with Bobby last year, and just to show his commitment to the tournament, it happened during Summer League, and the Kings, as we'll recall, last year won Summer League. Their championship game was on Tuesday night in Vegas. Bobby flew back from Vegas early in the morning on Monday, played in the tournament, stayed, met everybody, signed autographs, did all the things for the great sponsors and people who played, and then flew right back to Vegas and won us a championship. But that's his commitment, because a lot of players in that situation would have their name on a tournament but wouldn't actually show up in that situation. So, Greg, you know the character of Bobby Jackson.
Class act. I've been like a father to him, actually, too, mentoring, giving him some advice. Good or bad, but, you know, encouraging him along his life journey. It's really good. He's a good guy. He really is a good guy and a great father.
Yeah, he is. And the one thing, you know, obviously the Kings of the era, the early 2000s with Peja, Webb, Vlade, Bobby, Doug, Bibby, they'll always be remembered as such a great team on the floor. But I think, again, the reason that they're so endearing to us is that most of them have wanted to stay in this community one way or the other. Bobby lives here. He still works with the Kings, coaching the Stockton Kings. The things he's done in this community, people don't know, but he's raised children within his family as well, and taking care of so many members within his family. It's just extraordinary. And you know, he's from Salisbury, North Carolina. I had a chance to go back there. It's just a small little community. But when you mentioned the name Bobby Jackson and that family back there, he is a hero in that community. So his reach is widespread. And, you know, when his mother passed away, it was a big moment in Kings history, because the entire team went back to the funeral. They flew back on an off day together as a team to be there with Bobby. And it just tells you how much his teammates love him.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, incredible. And that's why I think people want to help Bobby Jackson out, and the foundation such a great cause. And, you know, is there availability still left in this tournament, Greg, for people who want to get involved?
You know, I always hold one or two foursomes, because it never fails. Bobby goes, oh, I'm going to bring these guys or those people.
Yeah.
And we throw them in. But yeah, there is a couple of spots open. There's always room in our bank account for somebody to send a check. That's for sure. And that goes for good purposes. So yeah, we do have a couple spots open. There might be a couple single spots open. So if there's any interest, you can give out my phone number.
We will definitely do that. I'm just wondering, if I get the hole in one and win the car, am I still eligible to win the $10,000 as well when I get to that hole?
Silence on that one.
Dead silence on that one. We know the answer to that one. It's a stupid question anyway, so not worth answering.
You know, Scott, you and I are going to be on the same foursome with Jason Ross and G-Man. So yep. I'm I'm expecting we're going to have a little bit of fun during the Bobby Jackson tournament as well.
Who's the long ball hitter in that group?
Yeah, you're Scott Marsh. He's the guy. Yeah.
I thought he slices a lot.
He does. Tells you a lot about the group, Greg. That's what it says right there.
Well, you know, hey, I appreciate you guys having me on. I really do. You guys are special to me.
You know, Greg, it's as Sacramentans, as people that are involved in the community, as Scott and I both are, it's always a pleasure to have other people and to shine a spotlight on them, you know, to let folks know what's being done, because, you know, sometimes these things are done under the radar, and it's important to know that good things are being done by good people for good people, and there's an opportunity to help. So give us the contact information at the foundation, so people listening that may want to send that check, where they can do that, Greg.
All right. Well, my phone number is 916-548-9555. They could also send a check made out to the Bobby Jackson Foundation to P.O. Box 221-222, Sacramento, California, 95822. A lot of twos in there, guys.
Yep.
All right.
And then, of course, the website's just simply the BobbyJacksonFoundation.org, and a lot of information's up there as well.
Yes, absolutely. We've been having some issues with the website, but just work your way through it until we fix it.
Greg, we look forward to seeing you tournament day, and you know, don't expect us to be up there accepting any trophies, but if you're looking for the group having the most fun, it'll be us.
I love it. Look forward to seeing you guys. Thanks again.
Greg Almazian, he is the executive director of the Bobby Jackson Foundation and tournament director of the Bobby Jackson Tournament. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Welcome back to the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa, along with Scott Marsh, and we are both very, very excited to welcome our special guest, Annika Sorenstam, who is regarded as one of the best, well, she is the best ever female golfer in history. And, you know, to have her on the show, it's really exciting. Good morning, Annika. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, good morning. Glad to be here.
You know, you're going to be coming out to California next week to be honored at the Langley, which is a fundraiser named after Jim Langley, the 34-year head golf professional, past head golf professional at Cypress Point. And, you know, you join quite an incredible list of folks that have been honored, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Casper, Tom Watson. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And this year it's Annika Sorenstam. So we're really excited to have you as a guest, and hope you feel the same way about being involved in that group.
I do. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's quite the honor. And like you said, if you look at the previous recipients, it's quite the list. And, you know, that area is such a beautiful place. Look forward to coming out and celebrating.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to find a prettier spot than Pebble Beach.
Yes, if you like water, golf, and food, and wine, and just, you know, it's got everything. So it's one of the, you know, the heaven on earth.
You know, you've heard all of this before, and I'm going to take just a moment to kind of acquaint people with a bit about your background. But before stepping away from competitive golf in 2008, you had amassed 90 international tournament victories, the most in history. You won 72 official LPGA tournaments and 10 majors. You were 8-time player of the year and the only female golfer to shoot 59 in competition, 8-time Solheim Cup competitor, and you captained the European team in 2017. First woman to play in a PGA Tour event since 1945. You received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I mean, the accomplishments go on and on and on. And you know, that's just kind of a thumbnail. But, you know, for us, you know, it's just, it's incredibly overwhelming you know, to kind of look at all of those things and think what an incredible career you had. Do you ever have that wow moment where you go, that was really something, or are you able to take the time as a competitor to kind of think about those things?
Well, thank you very much for that. And no, I mean, sometimes I do have to pinch myself. I started out playing this game as it was just a hobby of mine. And as you know, then I make it, a lifetime or a career out of it. So it's, I feel obviously very fortunate to be able to do something I enjoy so much and just kind of living my dream. So it's, everything has it, maybe it sinks out at different moments of my life, different times, different places and so forth. But of course, I'm very proud and honored to be, to have received some of these accolades, but also some of the achievements that I've achieved on the golf course.
You know, you sort of alluded to starting off as a hobby. I guess was it your parents that joined a golf club and you and your sister Charlotta just kind of came along?
They joined the club, literally. My mom says that she takes credit on my success because she was pregnant with me when she started to play golf. And so she said I could feel the rhythm way before I was born. So, they've been playing this game for a long time. And so we were introduced again early to it. And it's interesting because here, 50 years later or something, my dad is still playing quite a bit. My mom is not as much, but as you can imagine, golf has been a big part of our lives.
As a youngster, you played all kinds of sports, though, as well, and were accomplished in other sports.
I did. I grew up playing a lot of sports. I love sports. I think that was probably my thing. Downhill skiing. I think as a Swede, you have to ski. and then, played soccer. I played everything with the ball I played, and it was very competitive in tennis for many years. And then, golf was there, but I wasn't really hooked on it early on. I thought it was sport for older people. It was slow. I wanted more action and so forth. But the more I started to play, I realized that I was wrong. That's not what this sport is about. So luckily I picked it up a little bit more seriously at the age of 12 and then didn't take many years until I stopped all the other sports and only wanted to focus on golf.
When you began your amateur career, obviously you played there in Sweden and you played in tournaments and so on and so forth. And you ended up with a scholarship to Arizona. That's got to be kind of a culture shock to go from the weather in Sweden to the weather in Arizona. What was that like?
Yes, you're absolutely right. It was because I arrived in August. So, you can imagine Tucson in August. It's pretty hot, it was dry heat. And I remember arriving and landing and it was lightning, but no rain. I just thought that was strange. It was quite the shock. But what was good about it, I could play golf all year round. In Sweden, I was, when the fall came or maybe more, October, November, we couldn't really play golf outside and we couldn't play for, 6-7 months. And so for me to go to Arizona where the courses were just perfect shape and, and weather was, a little hot, but later it was just beautiful and tremendous golf courses. It was, I think that's really where I started to blossom. I got to play every day and I was even more motivated and it was excited to be out to practice.
Yeah, that was the beginning of this incredible career that you've had. Who did you have heroes growing up? I mean, the women that came before you, who were the ones that kind of inspired you?
Yeah, I mean, I growing up in Sweden, I would say first of all, it was Björn Borg. I mean, he played tennis. He was, as the big competitor or rival to John McEnroe, and I played tennis, so I did everything he did, and I thought that would help my career. Just unfortunately, my backhand, or maybe I should say fortunately, my backhand was not very good. So I looked up to him quite a bit because he was a national hero, and just he did a lot of things right at the time, and we didn't have the social media as we do now. I mean, women's golf was not really on TV. I watched some, men's European golf. And at that time it was Ballesteros, Nick Faldo, you know, Bernard Langer. I mean, it was men's golf. And at that time, I mean, as you know, there was really no women's golf clubs. There was certainly no women's clothing. It was just not, it wasn't tailored to women, which, you know, when you start thinking about it, it's like, I mean, I know I'm 50, but still that's not long ago that it really wasn't tailored for women. And then we started to see some magazines, and I would start to see the LPGA a little bit. And obviously I'd heard of Nancy Lopez, but it was mostly, you know, Anna Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, because they were on every cover, you know, Tom Watson. It wasn't until I really came, you know, to the US in 1990, that I started to see LPGA a little bit. We have, Liselotte Norman is a Swedish player. She won the US Open in 1988. And I remember reading in Swedish magazines about her and thought this was really cool. You know, then there was somebody closer to you. I didn't really know her, but I was, you know, kind of a fellow countrywoman. And that's when it started to, you know, the seed started to think, you know, maybe this is something I can do. And when the LPGA came to Tucson one year to play, I remember, you know, being out there on the range, just watching and observing and just being in awe of these LPGA players, and thought, you know what, I would love to do this one day.
You know, you mentioned Nancy Lopez, and it, there's a, if our listeners have not seen the documentary that the Golf Channel did, I think it was the Golf Channel, called Becoming Annika, I would certainly recommend you go do that. But you mentioned Nancy as looking up to Nancy, and women like, well, people, just all people, men and women, like Nancy, like Julie Inkster, you know, just glowing comments about you and your career and what you've done for not only for women's golf, but for women in general, as you say, you know, that not so many years ago, there was no focus on women's golf, but you've certainly had your part in changing that.
Yeah, it's nice to see. I mean, as we know, it's a sport for everyone, you know, different genders, different age, different skill level. That's the beauty of this game. I mean, it's a game for life, and it's nice to see. I mean, I remember in college, I mean, a lot of times we were wearing men's small or men's extra small shirts. That's all that was out there. So, you know, we really come a long way, and, you know, with, you know, equipment manufacturers like Callaway that, you know, design started with women, and it wasn't just cut down clubs with a pink grip. I mean, it sounds funny, but that's really what it was in the beginning. And it's become more tailored to women. And of course now the LPGA is doing, you know, great, and the coverage, and, you know, started, you know, with trailblazers like, you know, the Nancy's and, you know, Lopez and Jen Stevenson. I mean, they created, you know, some buzz and some excitement. So it's been nice to see kind of the, you know, the revolution of it, and it's become very global, and which I, you know, I'm a fan of. I think it's fun to be able to turn on something and see, you know, I remember when I played, you know, one of my rivals was, you know, Kari Webb from Australia. The other rival I had was Sari Park from South Korea. And then of course, Lorena Ochoa towards the end of my career from Mexico. And here I was, you know, a Swede, but living in the US and living a dream. And I mean, I think it's just quite the story, inspirational story to anybody who wants to take their, you know, their passion and, you know, live their dream.
Scott, I know you were talking about having seen the documentary Becoming Annika, and here she is with us today. That's pretty exciting.
It's awesome, Annika. Thanks for joining us. We greatly appreciate this. This is a real privilege for both of us. You know, you talk about just the growth of the game of women's golf and just, you know, women's sports in general. I just finished reading Pat Summitt's autobiography, the late great coach at the University of Tennessee, the all-time winningest coach in college history. And, you know, I had the opportunity a few years back to interview Billie Jean King, and you just talk about the growth of women's sports overall and how it has evolved and with Title IX and a lot of the collegiate sports. And I'm sure that's something that you've got to be very proud of.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's come a long ways. And I mean, just talking about the Becoming Annika, I think they did a really good job there. I don't know if you know, but it was 7 women on the Russian team, only female crew to put it together. And Hilary Swank was the, you know, the narrator. So it was really, I was, you know, very proud of that, and I think it portrayed my story quite well. And but you know, it's interesting you mentioned, you know, Pat Summitt and some, you know, some other trailblazers have done so much for women's sport in general, and nice to see that some of it is, you know, kind of moving into golf, and that we're, I wouldn't say breaking barriers, but we're, you know, making some good strides and continue to make an impact in young girls' life. And I think, you know, growing up, I, you know, having role models, I think that was one of the first questions. And, you know, I think it makes a difference if you can have role models that are, you know, similar to you, so that it's, you know, that you can really feel like there's, you know, hope and dreams out there. And so, yeah, it's, I think sport is, brings people together, but it also helps people, you know, take it to the next level and push themselves to achieve things that they maybe thought they never could.
Yeah, no, for sure. And certainly with golf, you know, the women playing is the growth area in the game right now. And, you know, Annika, I had the great fortune of covering you back in the 90s when the LPGA had an event here in Sacramento, where we're broadcasting from. And I remember standing close to the tee. It was 12 Bridges Golf Course at the time. It's now Cotto Madera. But I remember sitting there and watching you swing and thinking, this is the most beautiful golf swing, the most pure golf swing I've ever seen, male or female. And so I'm curious, because obviously you've put a lifetime of incredible hard work into your craft, but at the essence of it, how much of your swing has always been just pure natural talent versus hard work?
Well, thank you very much. And I do remember 12 Bridges. It's a beautiful area. I'm sure it has exploded by now, but when we played there, I mean, it was, I wouldn't say it was out in the middle of nowhere, but the wildlife, I remember, was just, I mean, there was turkeys, I mean, there was all kinds of stuff out there. But it, yeah, I mean, I, as you know, I mean, to get anywhere in life, whether, you know, you're a doctor, a lawyer, a golfer, or, you know, journalist, or just, you know, if you want to be good at something, it takes time, it takes practice, it takes discipline and focus. And I mean, I would say that, you know, when it comes to my swing, I'm, you know, I've put a lot of hours into it, as you said, a lot of repetition, a lot of just grinding back and forth. But I think what makes my swing, you know, functional is I have very few moving parts, you know, it kind of works together. You know, sometimes, I mean, it looks effortless, obviously, it doesn't always feel like that, as you know, it's a game of golf, you know, I've been able to repeat my swing under pressure quite well, because I don't have too many moving parts where timing is, you know, it, of course, is crucial, but I was able to time it quite well, and so, you know, if I look at my swing throughout the years, I mean, it really, you know, overall, it really hasn't changed. I have fine-tuned it. I've tried to make it a little bit more, you know, effective. I've tried to, you know, build up strength to increase the speed and, you know, to really have some more power. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, I notice now that, you know, I play, but not as much, as obviously not intense. I feel like I can still play the game because I still don't have a lot of moving parts. So, but the distance have kind of, you know, it's not there, but that's just the reality of life. So, but thank you. Yeah, no, I would say my strength has always been my, you know, my swing, and mostly my irons. I hit a lot of fairways. I hit a lot of greens. So, you know, just stayed away from big numbers kind of helped.
Yeah, that's always a good thing to do, obviously, for any golfer at any level. I know you retired for a little bit. You've come out of retirement in part because of your son and the chance to be able to play with him and being back on the senior tour. And then, of course, here in Northern California, where you have lived, playing in the American Century Championship the last few years. I wanted to ask you what that experience is like, playing with all the celebrity stars who are actually really good golfers, most of them on the male side, and what it's like specifically teeing up on 17 over the weekend with all the boats and people out there on the Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is, I mean, talk about a celebration, talk about a, you know, a festive environment and atmosphere. And I, you know, I've been lucky to play in a few of them. And I remember in the beginning, it was only like the 17th hole that had, you know, all the music and, you know, all the, activities, but now it seems like it's a lot of the holes. You know, there's a lot of, you know, partying going around, and which is what makes that tournament so special. You know, they have record crowds. It's, you know, Lake Tahoe is, you know, beautiful any time of the year, but especially that time of the year when there are people coming up on their boats and just, you know, bringing that, you know, the Tahoe feel to it. And like you said, I mean, these athletes, these actors, you know, celebrities in general, I mean, they are really good golfers. I mean, some of them play more than I do. I mean, they play 18, 36 a day, and they have swing coaches. And I mean, their mannerisms is just like, wow. I remember the first few time I played with them, I said, I thought this guy was, you know, a baseball player. He looks more like he's ready for, you know, the tour. Of course, they are, you know, they're tall, they're strong. And some of them, I mean, they're just so powerful. And it's just amazing to play with them. And in the beginning, I wanted to kind of keep up. And of course, I've learned I can't keep up with these 334 yards drives and just kind of focus on, you know, fairway greens for me. They do make mistakes here and there, but, you know, sometimes they stand there with a driver and a pitching wedge on a par five. And you're like, how can I compete against that? But, I mean, I know I do have done this for a living, so I guess we kind of even it out then, because many of them are younger. But I really enjoyed it, you know, playing in that the few times I've done it. They're very respectful for the game, and they know so much about it. I mean, you can just pick any, you know, football player that, you know, they practice rounds and, you know, they would just say, you know, show me how to chip, or, you know, so many of them, basketball players, just say, how do you have touch and what do you think about, you know, Tony Romo, or, you know, anybody that you have watched out there, they're students of the game, and I love that. They want to continue to get better, which is really cool.
We're talking with Annika Sorenstam here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. And Annika, you're great friends with Peter Jacobson, and he is the host of the Langley coming up here in Northern California, where you're going to be honored not only for your professional career, but also for all your efforts in support of worldwide charities. And you have your own Annika Foundation, which we're going to talk about in a bit. But how does it make you feel to support PGA Hope and the veterans and be with your friend Peter Jacobson?
Well, it's, I mean, you know, Peter. Peter is just, what a quality guy, what a fun guy, just, you know, energetic. And he's, you know, he's just done a great job in kind of his next career of commentating and emceeing and hosting. So he's just fun to be around. And of course, to be recognized at a place like, you know, Pebble Beach out there with, you know, it's just very special. So feel fortunate I'm bringing my family to be able to share this moment. They're going to get a chance to play Pebble Beach. It's a bucket list for them. I've been lucky to play a few times, but I would say that every time I go, I'm excited as well. And now to be able to share it with them. So, you know, I think golf is just an amazing sport in so many ways, the way it gives back to charities, to, you know, just recognizing people that have done, you know, something special in the sport. It's just, it's so, I mean, it makes you proud, right? I mean, to be in a sport where we can do these things and be, give back and be thankful. So here's another one of those moments. I mean, of course, it's, you know, I'm being recognized, but it's not necessarily about me. It's more about, you know, Mr. Langley, what he did, and the people that are being part of it and having a good time at the same time to, you know, kind of pay it forward in a way. That's what makes me more proud than anything.
And certainly that's, as you say, that's kind of the thread that runs through the game of golf. And for the people that have never had a chance to tee it up and don't quite understand the game, that's so much a rich part of it, is the relationships and what you do for each other and the moments off the golf course. So you are certainly well worthy of the recognition. You know, Scott alluded to you, you know, your son and your daughter and the notion that they had never seen you play. And so you teed it up in the U.S. Senior Women's Open so they could, you know, have a chance to see you play. What was that like? What was the difference in having your children watch you play as before you had the children?
Yeah, I mean, I play for a different purpose nowadays. I mean, before it was, you know, growing up and creating a career and, you know, you know, building a name for myself. Now it's more about sharing it with family, sharing with my loved ones. And, you know, it's just for them to see the hard work that I, you know, that I put in recently, because our son has been with me doing all this. And then obviously my husband on the bag and our daughter Ava supporting me in different ways. It just means a lot more, but I want them to see what it takes to, you know, hard work and discipline and focus, what it can take you in your life. And I want that to, you know, this to see that, but hopefully inspire not just my kids, but others to, you know, follow your dreams and do what you enjoy doing. So I think, you know, the purpose of me playing now is a lot different than it was. So.
Boy, and all of that certainly comes through in you know, referring back to the documentary Becoming Annika. I mean, your relationship with your children and your husband and your family is just, it's so strong, and it's such a warm story. And again, I would encourage anybody to make sure they see it. The Annika Foundation is something also you're very, very proud of. Where did the idea of a foundation come about, and what is the purpose?
Well, the purpose, or, you know, the idea just came. I knew I was somewhat stepping away from the game, and I wanted to give back and to say thank you to the sport in whatever way I could do that. And so what I thought is, well, why not do something that I know a little bit about, and that's competition, worldwide competition for young girls. And so we started to create, you know, tournaments around the world. And it was a way to just, again, to give back. And we wanted to make sure that we went to areas around the world that, you know, I have played, or where I think we can grow the game. So, you know, 14 years later now, we have 7 global tournaments. We start in the US, we have China, we have Europe, we have Latin America, we have New Zealand. And then also we have a college tournament, and these are events that we put together yearly. I go to all of them, and then we have initiatives called Share My Passion, which is a 3-day clinic for younger girls ages 6 to 12, and they have to write a letter why they enjoy golf so much. And it's more the fundamentals. We do a fitness station, a healthy lunch, and I do a clinic with these young girls. And we also give away a college an award, you know, sponsored by Stiefel, which is to the best Division I female golfer, and just to inspire them as well. So we try to, you know, we reach over 600 girls a year. We have donated over $8 million to junior golf the last, you know, 14 years, and many of them have gone on to play LPGA. We have several, over 200 that play on the Epson Tour nowadays. So we're super excited to see kind of the growth. And you can imagine 14 years. I mean, I've seen the Cordas play on our event, go up there. And, you know, I've seen, you know, Danielle King, and I've seen many of the stars that have doing well now, Allison Lee, and going up to play, you know, Soham Cup. And it's just, it's really, really cool to see that and follow their path. And it inspires me as much as inspires them at that age, because I love being with them and sharing my stories, and my, you know, hopefully my expertise will help them.
You know, the numbers that stick out to me is the $8 million that the foundation has given back to junior golf. That's a remarkable number. And the fact that of the Annika alumni, 87 players currently have LPGA cards. That's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, it's done really well. I mean, as you know, girls junior golf has done well. We have doubled in participation rate the last 15 years. We started with 17% of all juniors were girls, and now it's at 34. So we really increased it. And that's, you know, going to continue to do that.
The foundation certainly has to mean a great deal to you. And I applaud you for not only the notion, but for what you're doing for junior golf. As you say, the girls junior golf is the fastest growing segment in golf right now. And it's certainly due in great part to people like you. It's to Nancy Lopez. It's to, you know, it's the golf in general. Sort of the lure of the game has changed. And what we're finding is that the young girls are in many cases better athletes than the boys, at least at that age. So it's kind of fun to see that competition, to see them enjoying the game, and to see them, you know, eventually maybe even doing their part. Who knows what foundations they might start? You know, it all starts with just a little notion, and you know, so appreciate you, you know, having your spot in it and leaving a legacy behind as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You know, we're going to let you go here in a minute. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here, but you were doing your part to save the bees as well, which I thought was an interesting notion. Arnold Palmer has his Arnold Palmer, and I guess Jack Nicklaus has something, and Annika Sorenstam has a company called Fizzy Bees, which is kind of a, it has more to do with a description of you, I guess, huh?
Yeah, well, it started during COVID, actually. My husband and I, we were making drinks, and we came up with a formula for a full-flavor sparkling classic cocktails. There was a lot of what they call ready-to-drink out there, which is a alcoholic drink in a can, but they were either just had no flavor, felt like you were drinking sparkling water, or you picked one up and it had so much flavor and so many calories and so much sugar. And I told my husband there has to be something in between. And so, you know, during COVID, when there was not that much to do, we finalized the kitchen formula, and it's a vodka based drink with real fruit juices and sweetened with organic honey. And once COVID kind of, you know, opened up, we invited some friends to try, and they said, well, I think you have something here. So we ended up taking our kitchen formula to a commercialized formula, and then we hired a marketing company, and then we started to can February 3rd this year, and now we're selling in Ohio and Tennessee. And so it's kind of like, you never know what comes out of pandemics. I've never been in one, but we created this business, and it's kind of taken over a little bit. And, you know, we created the Fizzy Bee Promise, which is giving back to bees, which is what I'm mostly excited about. We're already giving away a donation to a non-profit organizations to help them with the bees. And as you know, bees are important in our ecosystem. So we're trying to give back and make sure that our business is sustainable in different ways. So it's been really exciting. I mean, we're trying to get into other states. We're knocking on the door in California and Nevada, and hope to be out there soon.
Incredible. Your success on the golf course, your success with your family, your success with your foundation is unmatched, and certainly is enviable to many of us. Appreciate your time. Appreciate you being with us, and thank you so much.
Of course. Likewise. Thank you very much, and take care.
All right. Bye-bye, Annika Sorenstam.
Bye-bye.
This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Scott, I don't know about you, but even hearing Annika the second time, it's just, you know, the greatest woman golfer that ever played the game. I mean, it was just incredible to be with her, and I enjoyed it as much as the first time.
Oh, I did too, and she was just such a pleasure to talk to, and gave us so much time and thoughtfulness. Appreciate that, and I know next week as part of our coverage from the Langley, we're going to hear from Annika a little bit more with Huey Lewis and some of the celebs, and that'll be great too.
Yeah, it's as I said at the top of the hour, it's an incredible event, and I am deeply committed to it, and it just everything is right about the event, and it's a great day at Pebble Beach, as you say. So we will be back next week at this time with more Golf to Go on the Sactown Sports 1140 KHDK 50,000 watt radio station. We look forward to having you along with us for the ride.